Just talk amongst... Oh, yes, well done. Trouble is that with the techie guys, we only notice when it goes wrong, not when it goes right, don't we? And they do a fantastic job, so we should all appreciate the people who do the techie stuff, because let's clap them. Well done. Right, so as I was saying, we're coming to the next bit of our series in Ephesians now. And I'm going to read you the bit that we're going to be looking at tonight. It's from Ephesians 2, starting at verse 11. It says, "Therefore, remember that formerly you, who are Gentiles by birth and called uncircumcised by those who call themselves the circumcision, which is done in the body by human hands, remember that at the time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ, you who once were far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has made the two groups one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility, by setting aside in his flesh the law with its commands and regulations. His purpose was to create in himself one humanity out of the two, thus making peace, and in one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. He came and preached peace to you who were far away, and peace to those of you who were near. For through him we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people, and also members of his household, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the chief cornerstone. In him the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him too you are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit." Now, I don't know about you, but reading through Ephesians, there is just so much in it, isn't there? And this is just a few verses we're looking at tonight. And when I was preparing, my notes were getting longer and longer and longer. And I've managed to get down to 4 pages. But it is very big type, because I need big type now, so don't worry too much. So I was praying about this. So I'm going to speak on what God touched my heart on out of this particular passage. But there is so much in there that we could look at. I'll tell you a story. I don't know about you. Do you remember the first time you really seriously fell out with somebody? As I was growing up, me and my sister used to squabble all the time. We always used to fall out. So that was just normal. You know, you fall out with your mum and dad and everything. But I can remember at the age of about 8 or 9, my first serious falling out with somebody. And it was all my fault. It was a guy called Matthew. I was, not as I said, about 9 years old. And the street we lived in, it was a cul-de-sac, there were lots of kids around, and it used to be safe to play out together, and we used to roam off, for all day, and our parents didn't know where we were, but it was great. But I was quite on the edge of this group. I was a really shy child. On the whole, I'd rather have my nose in a book than, playing games with people. And also, I was odd because my parents were Christians and I had to go to church on Sunday and I wasn't allowed to watch television on Sunday or go to parties on Sunday. So all in all, I was just different. This new family moved into our street, and this new family was a bit different from the normal run-of-the-mill family we had in our street. For a start, they had 4 children. I mean, that's nothing in Gateway, is it? But I mean, as opposed to the 2 children that everybody else had in the street, they were a bit darker in colour than everybody else. They were Irish. And there were rumour has it they were from gypsy descent. So all in all, this was very different from my white middle class street. And the 4 children were not accepted by the gang that lived in our road. But I really hit it off with the lad that was the same age as me, Matthew. And we really got on well together. And we spent hours playing together. And we were good friends. There was one summer's evening where, for some reason, the gang of children for that night had included me and made me feel part of that gang. And Matthew came along to find me, and the other children started teasing him and calling him names. And to my eternal shame, and I'm still ashamed of this now, I joined in with them because I wanted to be included. I wanted to feel part of what was going on. And so rather than stand up for my friend, I joined in with everybody else. And, you know, Matthew looked at them, but he looked at me and he thumped me so hard in the stomach. I was so winded, I couldn't breathe. And now, violence is not good, you know, on any circumstances, but I could understand why he did that to me rather than all the other children, because I'd betrayed him, I'd let him down. And, you know, I never had the courage to go and apologise to Matthew and to be reconciled to him. And so that I lost that friendship. You know, our betrayal of God when we, as sinners, were separated from him was far worse even than my betrayal of Matthew, as bad as that was. And yet, you know, in Ephesians, Paul has been trying to get it over to the people that he's writing to, just how amazing it is that in spite of everything that we've done, that he, you know, Christ has reconciled us to him. We've got his salvation through Christ. And that is just mind-blowing, isn't it? That's, you know, that he forgets about everything that we've done. He puts it aside and he brings us and has adopted us and made us one of his family. You know, that moment of salvation is an individual thing, isn't it? That's between us and God. But when we're saved, God doesn't save us into an individual existence. He saves us into his church, the temple that he is building, the bride that he wants to present to Jesus at the end of time. It's not an individual thing that we're saved into. And God's reconciliation, it's not just about being reconciled to God, as amazing as that is. It's that we are reconciled to each other as well. We become one with each other. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus continually challenges people's perceptions of others. You know, he goes against a lot of what was normal at that time, a lot of what was accepted, a lot of what the Pharisees said that you should do and you shouldn't do. And, you know, he went out of his way to spend time with the poor, the hurting, those people that were on the edge of society, criminals, sinners. You know, he did all sorts to make it clear to his disciples and to set an example that his gospel wasn't just for those that behaved a certain way, that it was for everybody. Because in him, we are equal. We are our one. There isn't a difference. And so, you know, we have to live in community with one another in order to live out the salvation that God has given us and the purposes he has for us. You know, he has given us a mission which is a corporate one. And when I use the word corporate, you know, you think of business and that. But actually, corporate comes from the word cor, Latin for body, and it's being one body. You know, and time and time again through the New Testament, you know, the language that is used is about us together. We don't exist separate from one another as Christians. We can't do that. You know, we've been hearing about the oikos, the community, that, you know, and there's it talks about fellowship as well. It's a relationship with one another that sort of is deeper than anything that you get in the world. In the Western society, you know, we do live in quite an individualistic society, don't we? It's about me, what makes me happy, what's good for me, you know, the idea of sort of making sacrifices for the common good isn't so popular these days. This wasn't always the case in this country, and it certainly wasn't the case when Jesus was around. You know, that a community, it was about doing what was best for the community rather than each one of us as individuals. And, you know, I've heard it said, you know, some people say you can be a Christian, but you don't have to go to church to be a Christian. And coming here on a Sunday doesn't make you a Christian, that's true. But the terminology is wrong because we don't go to church. if we're Christians, we are church, you know, we are part of this body, and we can't live out what God intended for us apart from each other. And I was trying to think of an analogy to sort of illustrate this, and the best one that I could come up with, and it's not perfect, is it's a bit like joining the army, getting the uniform, and doing your own thing, not going to the parades, not going to the training, not being ready for war, not you know, fighting arm in arm with your comrades in the army, but trying to do it on your own. That's a bit like it is, you know. You're not really a part of the army if you're by yourself, are you? And to achieve what God set for us to do, we have to be together. In Ephesus, you had all sorts of people. You had the Jews, who thought they were the most important because they were God's chosen people. You had the Romans, they were the conquerors, so they thought they were the most important people. The Greeks, you know, they had quite a high opinion of themselves as well because they were the philosophers and the thinkers. And so you had all these people mixed into together, and Paul is just trying to get across to them that actually those things no longer matter. You know, it doesn't matter what nationality they are any longer. What matters is that they are one in Christ, that together they are one in him. In Colossians 3:11 it says, there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarians, Scythian, Scythian, whatever you pronounce that, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. So God reconciled himself to us, but he's reconciled us to each other as well. And it's not that differences don't matter at all, because he has made us unique and with our part to play. But he is building us together into this temple. And I'm sorry if you're an English teacher, because in English I was taught that you shouldn't mix metaphors. So you shouldn't say something shiny like gold and it's also, I don't know, shiny like the sun. You know, you should, that's mixing metaphors, and that's not a good thing to do. But, you know, God's truth is so amazing that the Bible has to mix metaphors, and there is so many images for the same thing. And Paul talks of us, you know, being built into this temple. He talks about us being the bride of Christ. He talks about us being a body. But the thing that they have in common is that it's all one. And, you know, divisions, they damage that, you know. Differences, things that arise that get in between us, they damage that oneness, that beautiful thing that God is building up. As I said, we do each have our unique part to play, but that is for the good of the whole, you know. And sometimes we have a choice as to whether we help people in building one another up, or whether we hinder each other in that as well. And sometimes, you know, the prejudices or the assumptions that we can make about other people can be damaging. I can remember spending many years trying to live out what I'd been brought up and what the church I went to, perfect image of a Christian wife was. And I really, 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 really tried. And I just wasn't what that role was. And one day I realised actually that wasn't what the Bible was teaching. That was what had grown up and what people thought was the right way. And so often, you know, the Pharisees, we think about them and we think, oh, I wouldn't be like that, would I? But, you know, they'd got the religion that God had given them, but they'd added things onto them, things, you know, that made sense to them in some ways, but they weren't the essence of what had been given in the law all those years ago. And they'd lost what was really important about the law, which was the love. And, you know, we all tend to think that our way is the right way, don't we? I think when you get married, you realise this, don't you? Because you just assume your way is the right way until you're having to live with somebody who does things completely differently. And they just don't realise they're wrong. Christmas would be an interesting example of this. I had friends who really, really struggled with their biggest difficulty in their early married life was sorting Christmas. Well, her family, they opened the presents, immediately they got up in the morning. He's waited till after the Queen's speech. But, well, it is ridiculous, isn't it? But you see, these things arise, don't they? And because they're what we're used to, we end up doing things that actually perhaps aren't at all from the Bible, but they seem right to us. And I remember being in a lively, charismatic church. It was a great church, you know, but the impression that I got was that our way was the right way, and people who were in other sorts of churches, I'm not sure whether they were even saved, you know, especially, infant baptism, of course they can't possibly be saved. And then I started working for Youth of Christ, which is like an ecumenical organisation, which means it works with all denominations. And I suddenly found that these people from these other denominations were not only saved, they did some amazing work for God. And I was really humbled by what I saw in that. And I think We don't mean to put up divisions. We don't mean to make assumptions about others. We mean to accept people, and we mean to accept other people in the body. But unfortunately, divisions do come up, and they damage this oneness, this beautiful thing that God is creating. And I think sometimes it's we feed ourselves on things that make us fearful about things, or give us wrong impressions about things. So, you know, the media will perhaps give us certain impressions about things that aren't right. So even within the church, you know, there are perhaps prejudices on things like race, or we make assumptions about people. And it's just really not healthy, because Jesus' gospel was good news for absolutely everybody. Didn't matter what race, what colour, what their sexuality was, you know, whether they were an asylum seeker or a Muslim or whatever. You know, God's gospel, his good news, is for every single person. Doesn't matter who they are. And that love, you know, that acceptance, that oneness is meant to spill out of the church as well, because it's through that love and acceptance that Jesus says that other people will know that we are his disciples. And that love and acceptance, we're taught to love our neighbour as ourselves. And in the parable of the Good Samaritan, you know, the neighbour is the Samaritan, who they are enemies to the Jews, absolute enemies, you know, and yet it was this person who showed love. And Jesus told that story to try and make it clear to people that this, you know, that this love that he wanted us to show, it wasn't unique to certain people, it was for everybody. So I had Youth for Christ works in countries all around the world, and Lebanon is one of the countries that they work in, and Lebanon is a country of about 4 million, and they've had over 1 million asylum seekers come into the country over the last 3 or 4 years from Syria, because of all the troubles in Syria. And so Youth for Christ in Lebanon work in the refugee camps, not just with young people, but with all sorts of people. And a friend of mine visited not so long ago, and was talking to one of the ladies in the refugee camp, and this lady was a Muslim, and this lady was saying she didn't understand, because Christians, she was always been brought up to that Christians were her enemies. And yet, in her country in Syria, the Muslims were killing each other and bombing her home, and she'd lost family. And yet the Christians, who were supposed to be her enemies, were the ones showing love to her. And it's that love, you know, that acceptance of people in that way that brings about true unity and true peace. You know, with all the goods that armies and governments do, at the end of the day, nothing can bring about peace like the love of God. Another example of the Christian love and acceptance and the impact that it can make would, I don't know whether anybody saw the program that Paul O'Grady did about the Salvation Army not long before Christmas. It was fascinating, actually. So he's would say that he's got no faith. I think he was brought up a Catholic, but he was really impacted by the work of the Salvation Army, because in the 1980s he was a social worker working in one of the big London hospitals at the start of the AIDS epidemic. And at that time, I don't know whether those of you who were around in the 80s can remember, there was a lot of fear, wasn't there, about HIV and AIDS. A lot of misunderstanding about what it was all about, and the assumptions about the sorts of people who got it as well. And a lot of people wouldn't go near these AIDS patients in the hospital. But he said the Salvation Army didn't have any thought about their own safety. They went and they ministered to these AIDS patients and they showed them love. It didn't matter that they were ill. It didn't matter what background that they had come from. And that made a massive impact on him. And that is one of the reasons why this unity is so important, because when we are one, when we are reconciled to each other, when we are working out of that position and showing love to others, that's when other people can see who we really are in God and what that good news of the gospel really, really means. Our son got married last summer, and it was an amazing occasion. And Francesca, his fiance, now his wife, I mean, she's a very pretty girl anyway, you know, but she spent, as brides do, she spent a lot of time preparing for her wedding, as most brides do. She spent an awful lot of time, you know, thinking about the right dress, you know, what flowers she was going to have, what makeup she was going to have, how she was going to have her hair, getting the right shoes, everything to make sure that she was as beautiful as she possibly could be on that day. And, you know, when we sat at the front of the church and turned to look at her, as she came down the aisle, I got quite weepy. She looked absolutely amazing. I mean, she always looks pretty, but she looked so special. And I looked at Jack's face, and you should have seen the look on Jack's face as Francesca walked down the aisle. And it's the same again with so many weddings, but it meant so much to me because it was my son, you know. And just the look on his face when he saw her and saw how beautiful she was as she walked down the aisle was just incredible to see. And, you know, this is the picture that God uses, you know, of us as a bride getting ready to meet our husband, you know. And the look on Jack's face, that was nothing to the look on Jesus' face when, you know, he sees the bride all prepared and ready for his return. It's absolutely amazing. And our responsibility, you know, how we can do that, how we can prepare for that, you know, this unity, this living in a place of reconciliation is that's what helps make us beautiful. And that is what we're working towards, isn't it, at the end of the day. So I just as I was preparing this, you know, I was thinking, well, I really don't want to come across in saying that we shouldn't be judgmental and we shouldn't be prejudiced about other people. I didn't want to come across saying, feeling like I was being judgmental of people sitting here by saying all these things, if that makes sense. But I think, you know, what I'd really like us to do is just think about how we can, bearing in mind that this is about a body, it's about what we do for each other in order to glorify God. How can we help make each other beautiful? You know, how can we work together? You know, how can we accept each other? How can we encourage each other? How can we build each other up in order to make this wonderful temple that is one day going to be built, lived in by Jesus? And maybe you could just take a few minutes to think about that. What is it that we can actually do to help make each other beautiful?
Worship group can go up and just play, and perhaps we'll take just a few minutes to pick up on what Catherine shared with us about thinking about ourselves, but also about others, more importantly, and how we can help others to reflect more of Christ and make themselves ready. Let's just take a couple of minutes to do that.
Gives each one of us gifts. Gifts that we can use. And we can use them to build one another up. He gives us gifts to build up the body of the church. And sometimes I think we can quite often feel that we're not worthy. We've got to do something to earn those gifts. But they're a gift from a God who loves you. On that God. Just allow him just to speak into your hearts, because we become like the one that we worship. So let's just spend some time just focusing on who God is.